Hi, my name is Dr. Mark Allen Derry, and I'm an infectious diseases specialist in New Orleans.
Hi, my name is Doc Griggs, and I'm a community medicine doctor and health literacy expert. This is the Noise Filter Podcast, where an infectious diseases physician,
that's me, and a health literacy and communications expert,
that's me, talk about what you need to know about COVID-19.
You can find more information about this show and our other daily live updates and Q&A show at noisefiltershow.com.
So let's get started.
So welcome to COVID Noise Filter. My name is Dr. Mark Allen Derry, and we are so happy to have guest co-hosting with us, Nurse Julia. Welcome to the show, Nurse Julia.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm so excited to be coming on board with you guys.
Thank you so much. And now on to the show. Disparities in vaccination bear resemblance to voter suppression. Now, as vaccine distribution continues throughout the U.S., the allocation of doses has been inequitable. Well, it's the U.S., so what did we expect? Now, although they've been hit harder by the pandemic, Black Americans are being vaccinated at half the rate of white Americans. Now, while hesitancy certainly played a role in this disparity, there are also larger swaths of infrastructural issues preventing Black communities from accessing the vaccine. Many of those issues echo another source of disenfranchisement for Black Americans, voter suppression tactics.
First, vaccine sites tend to be in predominantly white areas. According to the University of Pittsburgh School of Pharmacy, Black Americans face longer driving distances than white Americans. During election cycles, governments often scale back on voting locations, limiting access and impeding those who don't have access to cars.
You know, just as a quick aside, how come we are not like in the streets protesting? Like, why is that just like a sentence that's just read without like, no, that is wrong, you know? But okay, we're in America.
Actually a lot going on.
Nurse Julia is in Georgia right now. So.
Right. Yeah, exactly. With the voter suppression, I actually participated in this collaboration between LeBron James organization, More Than a Vote, and Lyft. And Lyft actually provided free rides to voting sites and things like that. But yeah, There's been a lot, especially in Georgia, where they've kind of been the unfortunate forerunners of voter suppression and things like that. Yes. So it's just so interesting, but unfortunate nonetheless.
Yeah. Yes, indeed. Additionally, vaccine registration symptoms are typically online. White Americans are more likely than communities of color to have reliable internet access, allowing them to beat others in filling vaccination appointments. Now, according to the Democracy Labs, when prospective voters do not have access to the internet, they are not able to figure out how, where, and when they can vote.
Black Americans are also more likely to work in essential services that did not shift remote during the pandemic. This makes it harder for them to get free time to get the vaccine, and is obviously reminiscent of the long lines and inconvenient timing of voting.
The overwhelming similarities between the inequities of vaccine rollout and voting demonstrate just how severely racism is baked into municipal structures. According to NPR, the Biden administration is taking steps to overcome these disparities in vaccination, investing $250 million in federal grants toward the issue. This is a story that's very important to COVID Noise Filter, and we'll definitely continue to follow up with it. More reports of vaccine spoilage. So now, as the vaccine rollout continues, we are still experiencing problems with mass vaccine spoilage. There are several contributing factors as to why so many vaccines are going to waste. People cancel appointments, vaccines getting damaged during transportation and shipping, and there are others as well. Now, health officials are looking into how they can prevent so many vaccines going to waste as the rollout continues.
According to NPR, one county in North Carolina discarded 335 doses due to damages from shipping.
Wow.
Meanwhile, in Texas, some 5,000 doses were wasted in the month of February alone.
Oh.
Yeah. The vaccine maintenance is a delicate process, and there is a short window of time vaccines are available. The Moderna vials are relatively easier to maintain than Pfizer. Moderna vaccines can last about 30 days after leaving the deep freezer, while the Pfizer vaccine only lasts 5 days. However, The moment the seal of the vial is broken, the doses are only good for 6 more hours.
Now, states continue to try to grasp a better handle on effective vaccine distribution, but each state is handling the rollout differently. Now, it's an all hands on deck for effective rollout of vaccinations, but while the vaccine waste appears alarming, it is important to note that the waste is well less than 1%.
Still, all parties need to work productively to mitigate human error and negligence as best as possible. Of course, human error is a part of the process and to be expected. However, it is vital that we reduce the widespread spoilage and have vaccines getting into arms instead of the trash.
America sees massive pandemic data failings. Now, at the beginning of the pandemic, the United States struggled to develop adequate mechanisms for data collection about COVID-19. In order to supplement this, the Atlantic developed their COVID tracking project. When the CDC published their data dashboard in May, they reproduced a chart from the Atlantic's project, and their volunteer effort became a central source of pandemic data in the nation. The creators of the COVID tracking project see the U.S.'s data failures as a major contributor to the devastation of the pandemic in the nation and cite major ways America data culture must change in order to avoid repeating history. First, Americans must understand that data must be developed. COVID dashboards are saddled with synthesizing state data into a comprehensible standard, and it's dangerous to assume that every one of these processes will be sound. In order for governments to be able to analyze data, quality data must be created and resources allocated to do so. So the creators of the Atlantic's project were also warned against placing too much weight on data. Data, charts, graphs can feel very absolutist, but it's not always the best way to shed as much light as you would want to. Data is just another type of information and provides snapshots that reveal more when looked at together. Fortunately, an even more severe data crisis in America was avoided due to the data-driven volunteers who worked at the COVID tracking project and whose data has been used both by the Hopkins and New York Times, amongst others. And let me just say for myself personally, I was looking at COVID tracking project every day and I was very sad when they went offline, but kudos to them because they did an amazing job making sure that we were as up to date as possible. Prisons closed doors to visitors, so families have been writing letters. Okay, so now more than a year later, most prison centers across the country are still closed to outside visitors. The effort is to curtail and better limit the transmission of COVID-19 within these institutions. Now, unfortunately, this has restricted families from seeing their loved ones in prison, increasing profound isolation, which already exists within the prison system. In response, family members have turned to their stationery and writing utensils to send letters, a timeless form of communicating. Now, each letter offers a reminder to the incarcerated individual of life which awaits them behind bars and serves to lessen the harshness of the heightened isolation as the pandemic continues to keep prisons closed to visitors. Some family members write updates about others in the family and what they've experienced. Others recount memories of the past and the good old times before the harsh reality we live in today. Research about letter writing does indicate that letters can produce a mood boost and reduce stress. The act of receiving handwritten messages from loved ones can have a massive impact on improving mental health. Simply put, the thought of somebody who took the time to handcraft a personalized message can spark feelings of appreciation, comfort, especially considering the isolated reality of pandemic coupled with imprisonment. Families are hoping that prisons begin to find safe ways to open their doors to visitors again. Many of these families say that their loved ones have been physically separated for more than a year. And until that changes, families are committed to writing letters in the meantime, as every little bit of these loving reminders matters. Just as a reminder, that COVID-19 and the human immunodeficiency virus do share the same risk factors. Doc Griggs?
Thanks for listening to the Noise Filter Daily Podcast. Dr. Derry and I have a daily show at 4 p.m. Central Standard Time where we go into more detail on stories and answer your questions about COVID-19.
You can find Doc Griggs at DocGriggs1 on social media, and you can find me at Dr. Mark Allen Derry or at DRDERY. You can follow us at Noise Filter on Instagram, Noise Filter NOLA on Twitter, and for more information about us and the show, you can go to noisefiltershow.com. Hey, Doc Griggs, any last words?
Remember, get checked, get fit, get moving. And remember to get some rest to boost your immune system. And Doc?
Protect yourself and others by staying home, and please wear masks when you go outside. Remember, health is a human right.